Welcome to Vox Vomitus, also known as Word Vomit.
This is Shelley Johnson. I have a message from Agent Cooper. He wanted me to tell you that my name is actually Jennifer Ann Gordon, the author of Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent, Pretty Ugly, and the very recently released The Japanese Box and other stories. He wanted me to say that even though I know I am here with the Log Lady, that her name is actually Allison Martin, author of The Bourbon Books, which includes Dibs, Since September, Move on Melinda, and Climb the Salmon Ladder.
I do not introduce the log.
No, the log is not what it seems. We are also here with, and this is going to sound strange, I know her as Laura Palmer and she's dead, but Agent Cooper wanted me to tell you that Laura's real name is Josh Mallerman, the New York Times bestselling, stop it, the New York Times bestselling author of Bird Box, Daphne, and the very recently released Spin a Black Yarn. Diane, I don't know what any of this means. I am just a waitress at the Double R here to serve you some damn fine cups of coffee and pie. The last part of his message made no sense for me. I do not know where Agent Cooper is right now, but he wanted me to say that this is Vox Vomitus.
Agent Cooper's always like sneaking around my shit, you know? He's always like, he keeps looking into me, you know? It's like,
he's obsessed, Laura.
He's obsessed, totally obsessed with me.
If you are listening to just the audio of this, people, later on, turn it off right now and go to YouTube or go to our Facebook page, because this is really important visual art that is happening.
Is it?
Is it important?
I'm just going to eat my pie.
Definitely eat your pie. It's not Twin Peaks official because it's key lime, and I don't think they had limes at the Double R.
Sorry.
I love this. Josh, you look fantastic. Allison, you are an amazing log lady.
Thank you.
I felt weird dressing as Shelley because I identify as an Audrey, but my Audrey outfit is mainly saddle shoes and a plaid skirt, which you wouldn't be able to see. And also, Machen Amick was Alice Cooper on Riverdale, and Riverdale just ended, so I'm doing like a double tribute.
I think that is absolutely perfect with the background and everything. Like, better than it is.
And it's like, once I got the dumpy waitress outfit and I put it on, I was like, oh no, this is actually who I was meant to be.
I've always been like, your backgrounds are always amazing, you two.
This is a shower curtain.
Really? You're in a bathroom right now?
No, I'm in my bathroom. No. I'm on the toilet, Josh.
Wait, is it? Okay, Elisa says, welcome back, Laura/Argyle/Josh. What a way to celebrate National Read a Book Day. Is it? I didn't even know it was. No one tells me these things. I thought, okay, so National Read a Book Day is not the same time as Read Across America Week?
I don't know what any of that is.
Because that's in like March and it's around Dr. Seuss's birthday and that's when our children dress up at school like their favorite book characters.
I don't have any children.
Yeah, no, I have a log.
I've got this. So Josh, thank you for coming here dressing like Laura Palmer. We are going to talk about your book. Because we loved it a lot. But we need to talk a little tiny bit about Twin Peaks and the fact that you went on what I would consider a spiritual journey.
Oh, yeah.
Over the past year where you decided to, and you had not seen anything, watch David Lynch's entire career.
Yeah.
Why?
Okay, so.
Why did it take you so long? First question. Okay. Yeah, no, why did you just not watch anything else and only that? Because that's a lot.
Yeah.
Look at us now.
So much to say because, okay, you know how we all have like gaps, right? Like we all have like, oh, I have never read this girl or I haven't seen a single movie by that guy, whatever it is. And forever, mine's been David Lynch. He comes up all the time, as you would imagine, and parties and I'm always like, oh, yeah, I've never seen him. Oh, I've never seen him.
Oh, Twin Peaks.
Yeah, I'm just like, oh, I don't know. I don't know. You know, and then my manager, Ryan, had this super fun idea where he was like, let's watch the first movie of like a lot of great directors, right? So I don't remember all the names of them, but like Paul Thomas Anderson's first movie, I think it was called Heart Eight.
Yes.
The Wachowskis. It was amazing. I can't remember what that one was right now. It had Gina Gershon in it. It was so good.
So hot.
And there was like a whole slew. There was like 5, 6, 7. Oh, Danny Boyle's first movie was great. Shallow Grave. But that was the idea. No matter how tempted you were to go to their second movie, you had to just watch the first movie of everyone you watched. Coen Brothers, whatever. And you had to just blah, blah, blah. So in there came Eraserhead.
And then like, you couldn't move on.
I couldn't move on, man. I was like, right, I'm aborting the game. I'm out of the game. I'm watching his second. I'm not watching his second movie. I'm watching this guy's entire life.
I'm watching his career and go.
And I'm not gonna sleep and I'm not gonna do anything. I'm just
not gonna sleep. Cause some of these things I can say you went on this journey, but you took the entire internet with you because you were posting on Facebook about watching these things and watching them in the middle of the night. And there were nights when you guys didn't sleep. And
I think I remember a post that was like, it's 2 a.m. We're going into Fire Walk With Me. And I was like, that is not the time for this.
Yeah, there were a couple like ill-advised moments for sure. Yeah, we watched, what was it? There was two in one night, which was in like...
You can't do that.
It's
bad for the brain.
It's really good for the creativity. It started to feel a bit like something manic was happening. Something was like rattled inside, you know? I think we're trying to take in too much at once right now.
I will tell you a very quick story. When I was 18, I remember because I had not moved out from my parents' house, they gifted me the complete Twin Peaks on VHS for Christmas. And I was so excited. Then I got really sick because of my asthma, went to the hospital and pre-Pulp Fiction days got like an adrenaline, like an epinephrine thing to my heart. And I was awake for multiple days after that, of which I literally got to back to my parents' house and popped in like episode one of Twin Peaks. I'd already seen it many years ago, but I was like, not that many, but I watched the entire series, well, the first two seasons, and then I was done and still awake. So I went back to the beginning and I'm like, this is why I think my brain is the way it is, because for like 4 days of non-sleeping, I just watched Twin Peaks nonstop.
This also really shows the different parenting we had, because my parents watched Twin Peaks and were like, no, you aren't allowed to watch us. No, get out of the room. Why are you awake, child? Go back to bed.
And my parents let me watch it because I was so obsessed with the TV guide with Laura Palmer on it that said like, who killed Laura Palmer? I didn't know who David Lynch was. I was like so young, but I was just like, who did kill her?
Yeah, we were not old enough to watch it when it first came out. I did watch it when it came out.
I begged to stay up late, and they let me.
Look at this. I just wrote this recently.
Oh my God.
I've been writing my diary lately, everyone.
Oh my God. So, A Secret Diary of Laura Palmer, your diary, Laura. I have read that many. Josh, did you read it yet?
No, it was given to me. My friend Chris Brown gave it to me.
Oh my God. It is very pornographic at parts.
Oh wow.
And I was like, hell yeah. As a young teenager, like, parents, buy me this book. It's just based on the TV show I watched. And then I'm like,
besides, he doesn't need to read it. He wrote it. It's like
he wrote it.
He lived it. Stuff after it's published. Oh, no one has to.
I'm out in the woods like partying right now.
Yeah. You're doing a shift at One Eye Jacks.
So I wasn't, man, from the minute, I mean, is the opening scene Cooper driving and talking? Like, is
yeah,
that?
Yeah, it's Diane. It's February 24th.
Moment. Yep. That's how it opens, right? Oh, well, yeah. I guess. Okay.
Well, it's you hear the soundtrack, I think. Or maybe, I can't remember because the soundtrack is so perfect. But I think that opening scene. Maybe the cold open is finding Laura Palmer's body.
Right,
And then it's Diane, and February 24th.
Immediately, him in the car, I was like, what's this, man? That his character is, I mean, one episode in, I'm like, it's one of my favorite characters I've ever encountered in any medium.
Yeah.
He's like an optimist in hell. He's like a.
I love that.
Yeah, I like.
And yet, none of us are dressed like him. If I would have realized that was on the table, I would not be wearing.
I'm so sorry. I was log lady. You're the log lady.
I mean, I don't have a black suit anymore either. But at one point in time, I did. I could have been like gender bent Agent Cooper.
Come on. Yeah,
that would be really hot.
That does sound great. Yeah. Well,
we're all like, wow.
It's time. But I probably wouldn't have gotten to eat pie on camera. And as you know, if there's an opportunity for me to eat during this show, I do.
Fair. I feel really bad that I'm not eating pie, but I cannot do gluten.
Yeah.
And that I'm not is a crime. Either. You're not supposed to either, but you have an entire cherry pie in front of you.
Like, yeah.
He hasn't eaten it yet.
I killed it or something.
I know. I was like,
Jerry's kind of morbid.
Like fire walk with
center, I don't think.
Well, hey, you were trying to figure out how to do the red effect. Just kind of smear that over the lens. It's like just cherry on the computer. Don't do that to your computer, please.
I think it's a decent idea.
No, I was like, do not give Josh ideas.
I could just like hold. No, I was wrong. Oh no, did it land? Okay, don't worry
about it. No, it didn't. You're good. You're good. I mean, I can barely see anything because I'm not wearing my glasses, but
same. Mine are part of my costume, but not as red. And I actually do need them to see. So this
somebody on this show needs to be responsible, log lady. And that's you.
I know.
You take care of the log.
And the comments over here, like Regina's saying, if someone had arrived as Diane, that would have been hilarious. Just a static shot of a handheld tape recorder, just like,
oh, that is good.
That works so.
Well, we can add a fourth just image or something.
I know, just a tape recorder.
I have one of those somewhere. I don't know where it is.
So, Josh, after you read The Secret Diaries of Laura Palmer, you have to go on eBay and get the Agent Cooper Diane tapes. It's an audio book.
Is it really?
It used to be, but I don't know if it's still like technically in print. So you might have to physically get like the CDs.
Okay.
And it's Kyle MacLachlan, literally like Diane, blah, blah, blah. And it's all of the tapes that we didn't hear on the show.
Okay. One of the like wildest things to me, and correct me if I'm wrong. Okay. But Shirley, Laura was supposed to be just like the photo and maybe that one video moment, which is so unsettling and so good.
Oh God. When they like zoom in on her eye.
Yeah. It's just so perfectly done.
Perfect.
And he thought she was great in that, so then he created the cousin character. Right? Okay. And Bob was just a crew member?
Yes.
So
who was creepy enough that they were like, we just need to film this little bit.
Okay, but think about what that means. Okay, this is one of the greatest works of art we've ever experienced, right? And you're telling me that it started with filming and everything without the... I guess you would say the evil entity story at all. I mean, Bob was like added in and yeah. Laura was, her story was there, but expanded on and her, at least the actor, whatever. Like two like pillars of that show. They didn't even go in with those in place.
I know. So what I read was originally Twin Peaks, the TV show, was filmed as like a 2-hour made for TV movie. And he like went in without a villain. And he was like, we need like one scene of her getting killed or like something creepy happening. And they were like, you like guy holding the
macker with the mic.
Like he spent more time like developing like, hi, I'm a waitress. This is pie and log lady. And he's like, I have nothing for the villain. I don't know who killed her.
See, that me is so talk about pantser, but to be doing a pantser. Like a whole.
I feel like this is my process. Go on.
Right, but it's like here we had a chance to see. Like usually that process is like us alone in our office, but here
like scream crying, going, like, "Why doesn't it make sense?"
I'm yeah,
just typing things.
I just started. I made it to page 170 in a rewrite, and yesterday I was like, "Man, I don't think that I have like my hand around this story." So I was like, "Ah, fuck!" So I started from the beginning again. I feel great about it now. I made it to page like 50 through page 50 yesterday. I'm like, no, this is good. But the book's only like 240 and I was at 170 and I'm like, no.
Oh no, that's not good. That's not a good page to be on when you're like, it's not working.
Right. I'm like, I just don't. I'm like, do I know where everyone's at in this? And I'm like, no, I don't. So I started over. Have you guys done that?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the entire basis of our podcast. This is why we call it word vomit. Cause we've all been in that place where you're just typing and typing and you go, Especially like you'll see it on the rewrite and you're like, oh, it doesn't make sense.
Well, like, and I
the
also
vomit wanted... draft is my favorite. Yeah. That's when I'm always like,
oh, yeah.
I'm going to win the Pulitzer Prize or some nonsense, like for horror. Typing, such a genius. And then I go back and reread and I'm like,
Right. And then the problem with being a pantser is then when you're asked to do things that pantsers physically can't do,
like write a synopsis.
Right. Right. Well, before the book is written, and right. I have been put in this position a couple times now where it's like, so-and-so editor wants this. And like, for a book that only sort of exists up here. Yeah, I can't do that. And then I just gibber out stuff and hope that at some point enough is there that they say, yes, we want the rest of the gibber. And so far it's worked that they've wanted more gibber, but it's like, yeah, you're asking for me to create something when I'm just like, is vibes a thing? Can you
vibes is a thing.
Vibes?
This is how I read. But that's how I read books, watch TV shows, read movies. I'm like, is the vibe of this good? Yeah. Is it just like a feeling?
Yeah.
I'm not there for the plot.
I'm exactly the same way. Yep.
And this is why we're here all dressed like Twin Peaks characters, because Twin Peaks is a vibe.
Yep.
It's a way of life.
Well, and I'm holding this mostly, and I did not try to match this, but it does match quite nicely. But this is like special edition of Josh's Inspection, which I had already read, but it did not have this cover. And I was
that
just
cover is freaking
drooling over it. And Josh sent it to me because.
So, okay. So what?
And this is like one of my favorites. And seriously, the cover just freaks me out because I'm like, uh-huh.
So Josh sent you a present. Josh sent you a present. Mm-hmm. And when I met Josh in real life, he gave a present to somebody else in front of me. And I'm yet to get a present from Josh Mallerman, other than the fact that you were very kind and you read the Japanese box and you blurbed it. So I know Alex.
And never forget that
jealous.
When you first introduced me to, like, you need to read these books before we have Josh on, because you were familiar with his work. I was not, other than knowing there's a movie by a book he wrote. So I know he exists.
And I was like screaming, you have to read Unburied Carol right
and
now.
Well, I think you had me read A House at the Bottom of the Lake first. And the reason though, and I listened, like, it's dedicated to me. And then you had to explain to me that no, there's another Allison in the car, that it was not dedicated to me. And I'm just like, well, I'm keeping the dedication anyways.
I know Allison's like, I love that it was dedicated to like an person. It's me personally. I'm like
no,
it's actually his fiance, and she's like a damn goddess.
I know. She's like 3 feet taller than me. It's like I'm a
3 feet taller than you. She's a singer.
You may still walk in wrapped in plastic.
We're waiting. Maybe don't do that.
Talked about it last night.
I was gonna text you and just be like, she doesn't need to be like fully wrapped in plastic. She just needs like saran wrap around her face.
Yep.
Which is still bad.
Don't do that. Don't put things around your head. Bag is not for a toy for children.
She's not a child.
I know, but still.
But entirely wrapped in plastic sounds good right now. Sounds.
I think it sounds terrible. Cooler than entirely wrapped in polyester, which is
what. Cardigan?
And a cardigan sweater. Allison's in Southern California. Everyone.
I'm dying. It's okay. We have Florida weather right now, which goes with my Florida pie, because it's gray and muggy and gross, and it's just ugly. And I'm sweating inside my house. It's just stupid.
It's 94 degrees here, and I'm in New Hampshire, and it's September.
Okay, but what temperature?
Yeah, because you're in Michigan.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
When I lived in the Midwest, because I lived in Ohio, so we were like Michigan sworn enemies, supposedly, for a little while. I was always like, why is it 95 degrees in August and October? Like, it was just like, it was always hot.
Where did you live in Ohio again?
Columbus.
Oh, wait, did you go to OSU?
No, I didn't. I just moved there for more complicated reasons than this podcast needs to hear live. But my husband did go to OSU. My current husband.
The current one.
The current one.
I love how it's like right now.
I feel like Joan Collins or something.
Well, that, and you also were complimenting Josh's hair and that it looks just like your husband's hair. And I've never seen his hair quite that long. And like,
Yeah, no.
I've played with bands where guys, you know, they this was their hair, man. Like they just like took the stage. Like this was real, you know. And it's now that, like I have it for 10 minutes. I'm like, man, this is a fucking commitment, man.
It's a commitment. It's hot, right? Because you're also wearing a damn tiara. So yeah. Like you committed to the blonde wig. You're also wearing your, and this is a really great segue, your Sam Hatton jacket, which is like a Letterman's jacket. So still Twin Peaksy. But Sam Hatton is the setting for, it's very shiny.
Yeah, you've got your ring lights all of your spin of black yarn.
I know. All of the novellas in spin of black yarn.
Okay, is Daphne also set in Sam Hatton?
So
that's where it should be, because I'm like, that's where the Letterman jacket would make sense, is if the team was wearing those. All right.
Daphne was originally story one for Spin of Black Yarn.
And then she
took over because she is the scariest, terrifying, most evil thing that I've ever experienced in a book in my life.
Seriously, that is the scariest of yours, hands down.
Oh, that's fucking awesome. I sent that to the editor, Trisha, and she was like, no, this first one should be its own, and then open the collection with Half the House is Haunted. And I was like, Half the House Haunted doesn't feel like an opener, da-da-da-da-da. And then, but I saw it the way that she like did it. I like, was able to like, let's read it as if this is how it goes. I was like, oh, you're totally right. Okay. And she also gave me the like, just like the nudges of like how to make Daphne. It was already like 30,000 words. Mm-hmm. She's like, I'm telling you, Josh, a little more here. And it's going to be like 60, 70. And she was exactly right.
And it's so, I obviously love all of your work. I have a very soft spot for Unbury Carroll. Bird Box was my first, but Daphne to me really spoke to my soul as somebody who has, and I've talked to you about this before, who has anxiety disorder.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Like you got it. And not in a way that was triggering. So people with anxiety disorder, it's not like, ew, you can't read the book. I said this to my husband and he was just like, that doesn't make sense. I'm like, it does if you read it. It's a love letter to anxiety disorder.
Yeah.
It's like, this is who you are.
You know, there's Alice and I were talking about this recently about how, what's the right phrase? Where, and it talks about this in the book, and we've talked about it before, that you can't like that you fall for it every time, right? That you believe it every time.
Every time I'm like, this is the time horror, I'm going to die.
Right. Literally every single time. You never say to yourself, I made it through the last one, then I'll be fine. No. That doesn't, whatever that is out. So, but what you can tell yourself is like, okay, it's here. I have to endure it for the duration of it. And once you do that, I don't want to say like give into it. It's not that, but it's also not resisting it. So it's just feel bad for a minute. Feel bad for 10 minutes, whatever it is.
Ride it out.
Once you
like just the wave that, hitting you,
it changes everything. Because now you're not adding embarrassment to the anxiety. You're not adding anger to the anxiety. You're not adding envy of other people that don't experience anxiety to the anxiety. Now you just have the root experience, and you can get in. Then you're like, okay. I mean, when it's done,
it's yours. It's your experience. So at the end of the day, you at least have that.
Yeah, I don't want you to stop being an author, but have you considered being a therapist on the side? Because that helps. Because as somebody who has, like, for me, I have agitative depression, which is like, it's not really either depression or anxiety, but it's kind of both. And I don't do depression right. That's exactly how it is.
I love the fact you just said you don't do depression right.
I don't do anything right. I've never presented any kind of medical condition the way it should. So doctors are always having lots of fun with me, but I do these negative cognitive cycles. And once I am starting down one, you have to just write it out, because if you try to pull yourself out, it's like you're fighting a riptide.
Yeah.
And if you're fighting, you'll drown at the end. You just got to go through it. And then you're back on the shore and you're like, all right, you got through it. Yeah. But when I've gotten other advice or other stuff hadn't helped, and anything that I had to take, like if I was given Xanax to take during one, by the time it would have kicked in, I already would have been through the worst. So anything topical, not topical, but like take as needed. So I need something in my system all the time, like coffee.
Yes. Or alcohol or marijuana.
So
I'm like, I have other coping mechanisms.
We probably talked about this last time, but I don't know. But
maybe
Allison, it was one of the greatest like suggestions I've ever had or been told for anxiety, which was, you know, there was like, hey, you should try running, but then I was nervous when I ran. I got drunk with some friends, but then I was nervous while I was drinking. Like I couldn't get out from under it. Mm-hmm. And then she was like, have you ever tried to just time an episode?
Remember you did talk about this. Okay, and so love that.
So real fast, I was like, what do you mean time? And she's like, just look at the clock when it starts. And then when it abates, look again. And I'm like, all right. So in a nutshell, that first one was about 7 minutes long. Like when it peaks out, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, 7 minutes. All right. And then the next one, a few hours later, was about 7 minutes long. And all of a sudden,
it's like contractions. You're giving birth to anxiety.
Yeah.
It's my child. Well, then it was this my neurosis. Slide.
And I was able to crawl out
the whole time.
So it gave this infinite nebulous thing some form.
Yeah.
And of course, it doesn't last exactly 7 minutes or this or that, but it tells you there is an actual other side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And timing it makes a lot of sense because I think when you're in it, it feels infinite. And if you can see, okay, it was seven. You can get through, you can do anything for seven minutes.
You can do anything for 7 minutes.
Right.
And yeah, no, I love that so much. So this went into like a total, like, let's just talk about our mental illness. We're all dressed as like characters. I mean, I feel like people get it. If they just like tuned in right now, they're like,
what are you just talking about? I thought there was a book.
We are talking about a book. I keep having this like little fight in my head of which of your fictional cities I would want to live in more slash. I feel like my hair would do better if I lived in Goblin because it's really like humid and moist and it rains all the time. But like the part of me that needs things to be cold and dead inside thinks I belong in Samhattan.
Uh-huh.
So if you had to spend a weekend in one of your fictional cities and tell our listeners and viewers a little bit about each of them, which one would you pick?
Is this like, which would you survive longest in or which one would you actually enjoy?
Like if you had, here's the thing. For some reason, your family has gotten a Airbnb in one of these places.
Oh, wow.
Which is the place that you would say, oh, I can't, I sprained my ankle. Like I can't go.
I think Goblin. I think because it's just so colorful and so quirky and so strange that I'm turned on by like people or characters that are obsessives, and everyone in Goblin is obsessed with something to the point of ruin. Whereas
everyone's like, I'm dead inside. I will not feel my feelings.
Yeah.
Until the feelings come back and literally haunt me.
Yeah. Yeah. Sam Hatton is in like industrial, like white skyline, like grayish whites and got super colorful. But it does feel like chances are a weekend in Goblin is the perfect amount of time for some terrible obsessive story to happen to you.
Yeah.
So especially think about it. I love the idea of a family going there.
Day trip in Goblin.
Yeah, like a day
trip. Go to the zoo, be traumatized by the zoo. Yeah.
And they think I'm like, still traumatized really by the zoo. Because it's like, oh, they have like great parks. It's going to be so good. We can go. And then they're like, oh, shit, it's raining the whole time.
The whole time, right.
The whole time. We just have to stay in this weird house.
Okay.
Oh, like, why is the house moving? Why is there an arm coming? Like, oh.
And then Sam Hatton, it's like, well, there's a cemetery in the very center of town. And it sounds amazing.
I know. And the entire town is like kind of built around that. And you look in the sky and you're like,
it's unusual.
Isn't the sky supposed to be blue? It's just weird.
Yeah.
Sam Hatton to me really honestly reminds me of like a, and I don't mean this insulting to anything in Ohio in a way, but there were parts of Columbus that were just so new because it's a huge city, but it's new.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And like my husband and I would like look in the sky sometimes and we were like, there's just like no clouds and you can't even see that it's blue. It just is like mini malls and storage units and the like, you know, Victoria's Secret headquarters. Wow. And you're just like, what is this? Like, it makes no sense. And then there was like a huge, gorgeous cemetery that we would go and picnic in because we're like, well, at least it's green here.
It's pretty.
Yeah, no, that's exactly. I even get that the Sam Hatton vibe driving on 80 across Ohio.
Yes.
Like it has that same. Yeah, it's not that it's ugly. It's not that. It just there's a sense of like that like post-industrial like death to it or something.
Is yes. And I'll say this like
high school almost.
I don't know. Cleveland's really cool because it's like a mini Detroit, and Cincinnati's cool because it's kind of like, you know, mini the South. But Columbus, where I lived, was just so new. It's really just a huge college and mini malls. And it's flat.
Yeah.
Flat.
So Sam Hatton in a really great way reminds me of that because it terrifies the hell out of me.
Then there's also a sense like if I had to move to Sam Hatton, like, or a place like that, like I'd be excited because I would know that there's like people like us that live there that like to
Doug and Judy.
There are people like to be met there. You know what I mean by that? Like this city's like, oh God, you know, but there's someone here that's awesome. I can't wait to fucking meet them.
So, I mean, the cool thing about like a city like Columbus was it, you know, it has this huge university, but it also has like a really huge arts community and a really great LGBTQ community. So there was like this weird thing where it's like, I grow corn. I work in an office building. And like, you know, my husband and I did like the coolest art exhibitions in our life in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah, right. Right, like there's like certain magic happens in places like that where it's not necessarily supposed to or something.
Now, exactly. Pearl's set in Chowder, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like I'd be safer in Chowder most of the time, and I just like the name Chowder. I mean, I want to live in a place named after soup.
Yeah, Chowder, man. Chowder made it into the newest book that I'm writing right now.
Did it?
Yeah.
Because I knew there was a mention of it. I want to say in Doug and Judy, there was like a mention of something that happened there. Just a little shoot. I'm like, that's Pearl. I know what happened. But
there was a
moment where Judy's talking about her animal loving friend and all that. Yeah.
Yes.
Who's good, but why is she like that anyway?
Why is she like it? It's such a waste. She wanted to go rescue all these pigs and watch out her. And we know, like, I don't know that she wanted to do that.
I don't think she should.
There's probably one pig she should just leave alone.
Yeah.
Doug and Judy, I think when I started that novella in Spin a Black Yarn, I messaged you and I was just like, I want to be Judy in a stage play of this.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do that. Like, the theater person in me was just like, she is so despicably funny and broken.
Okay, but are you all claustrophobic? Because just even reading it, that story, there are a couple
of words. I am so claustrophobic
I was picturing it and I just was like having to take breaks because of the mental claustrophobia of them in this. And I'm just like, okay, that's enough of that for a minute. And then
I don't think I could do that. I don't think I could do the house washer either. I think I would be like so freaked out.
Well, that's why I say like stage play.
No,
you're not actually flooding a room.
You're in a tube.
I know you're I'm in a tube. I know, like as I'm like, I'm in a tube. Josh, I've cast myself in this.
No, but we should actually maybe like talk more about this. So there's a book
store
in town called BookBeat, and it's run by this amazing couple. They've run it for like 40 something years now. And the husband, he puts on some sort of like theatrical thing where it's like a wall of like water pretty much. And then so then what happens behind it is like underwater.
Yes.
And that we could, imagine you in the tube with his same wallish design of like, but that's like the solution instead of water.
Like, I can handle the wall.
Right. Like we actually have the means of doing that.
Wow. Okay.
This submarine ride. There's one at Legoland and one, of course, at Disneyland, and I can barely get through that. It's just.
Oh yeah.
You're not even really underwater. You're just there.
I could be fine. I could get through it.
Okay, and Josh, I do want to know how much time you spent talking to my older sister to do Half This House Is Haunted, because I swear you were mining my childhood, because my sister was that older sibling, and if she's watching, she knows what she did. But seriously, I was reading all that, and at first I thought the younger sibling was a girl because the name is kind of gender neutral, and then I was like, oh, it's a boy, but I'm still that kid, because that seriously, and Jennifer knows, because
She because you tell me that I remind you of your older sister all the time.
The kind of things my sister would do, like the classic story, and I may have shared this before, is when we got back from the Natural History Museum, my sister had told me that she had made friends with Pooh the mummy. It's P-U, and it's not like poop, it's Pooh.
Not Winnie.
And that it was going to come to our house and take me away in the middle of the night. And we had a bed that faced a double door, one of those like the mirrored doors. And so you could see the window behind us. And this is why I can never sleep. I mean, I'd still blame all my trauma back on her.
He would like,
that's
man.
A great story.
Get out of bed. Tell me who's
coming. I think Josh and I are both going.
Who the mummy sounds unbelievable.
This is why. Look, when I was
who the mummy is going to be in this Manhattan Museum.
I could not.
His next collection.
I could not. There's a local restaurant. Still love it. People either say Rutabagors or Rutabagers, whatever. The restaurant, the one in Fullerton, had different themed rooms. And when I was younger, I could not eat in the Egyptian themed room because of her.
Because of the mummy?
Because I'm like, one of these is going to come get me. I can't handle Egyptian stuff. I eventually kind of got past it. I know it's super fascinating. Still terrified.
Because all I love that you were so sarcastic with, I know it's super fascinating, but the mummy is still
I think Egyptian stuff is really interesting. Interesting. All the artifacts. I can walk through a museum and see all this stuff. But thanks to my sister, I'm still convinced some of them are going to follow me home.
So you read Half the House is Haunted and had a lot of like childhood flashbacks. I read Half the House is Haunted and I thought to myself, why is Josh describing the house I live in?
Oh, because you live there. That's why. But
Well, our second floor, it was weirdly similar to like there was a couple lines that I was just like, oh, that sounds like upstairs. And then I'm like, that's where I always hear Esther's feet. Like that's where Esther walks. Yeah. So when I started this collection and I read the first story, Half the House is Haunted, I thought this is my favorite story in this collection, hands down. I know it already. But then I thought that for every single story.
That's what happened.
I read. Yeah. No, I was like, this one's my favorite.
I feel like I resonated with that one so much. But I think the one that because some of it is just because of the technique you used, Jupiter Drop is gonna stay up here. Ooh. Forever, because I'm just going to keep repeating it to people, and people are going to be like, "Are you all right?" I'll be like, "No, not really."
But if you think you see life on Jupiter, you're
mistaken. There is no life on Jupiter. Life on Jupiter, you are mistaken. And I will.
I want to tattoo that.
And be like,
that.
"Are you okay?" And I'll be like, "No." But I don't know if it's because I'm more of a sci-fi speculative versus Jennifer has dragged me kicking and screaming towards more horror.
Yeah, no, that's super interesting.
And I loved it.
And it was Trisha's idea to put those two stories next to each other, Doug and Judy and the Jupiter Drop.
Because they are more sci-fi.
My instinct was like, no, but they're both like in glass tubes essentially. I don't know, but they're so different. They're so different. And I started to see it as like more like an album, right? And why not have the two slower songs in a row or the two rockers in a row, the two more like elements in a row?
Yeah.
Right? Because then the album goes there for a minute before going somewhere else. And I thought, oh, that's pretty smart. So Trisha ordered it and everything. Yeah.
It's always good to have somebody else come in and go like, no, this is the order this belongs in. Mm-hmm. Because I'm always just like, I don't know. I mean,
alphabetical? Is that an
alphabetical
order?
Alphabetical. No, can we do alphabetical? Can we do random? Can we do the least offensive first and then the most disgusting at the end?
Oh, and I have to think which is the most disgusting because I would say Argyle.
Yeah.
Are you saying that? Wait, are you saying that because of that stove scene or are you just saying in a general sense?
I think just because of the whole the concept,
unsettled disgustingness of
the
it.
The whole concept of it was the one that when you're like, okay, he's saying all this stuff and it is almost painful when you're reading it and going, he is vomiting this.
Yeah.
And that to me, if you went in that order, whereas there are some disturbing images and I can't even say Igorev. Roman, where are you?
Roman's working. I'm sorry.
I know.
I did love the Russian stuff.
And that was amazing, but nothing, even things that were maybe should have been more disturbing hit me on that level because it was done in a different way, if that makes sense. And the fact that it was a different setting and maybe because I don't relate to being a Russian triplet.
Personally. How do you not relate to me? I feel like we're Russian triplets right here.
We are the Russian. We all have the same hair.
We're literally all the same hair.
And we all would have been
We're all wearing polyester.
We would have been like a Neapolitan, where I've got like the brown, you've got the strawberry, the vanilla.
With Argyle, I had a friend and I years ago were watching like the news or something. Mm-hmm. And there was a story, like someone had done something just terrible, something like rotten, you know. And I remember being like,
on the news, really? Like it was, it was something bad?
And my friend, like, just almost to himself, he was like, thank God I'm not wired that way. And I was like, that's an interesting way of looking at it. Like, right, because in my head, I'm like, oh, this freak or this monster or whatever. And then I was like, you're right. This guy didn't like choose to be like whatever this is. This person was wired like a way that we're not. And my friend, his name is Jason. Jason was like, yeah, man, like think about how grateful we should be that we aren't wired like that. We do not want to do what that guy wanted to do.
Right. Those impulses are not in us. So
right. And
we're horrified that he's even thinking of it.
And forever I have like, it's not that I like see like a murderer or someone even something just as bad. It's not like I'm empathetic to that. It's not that, but it's that it just gave me like this other angle on that or something. Yeah. And I was like, forever I've been like, man, I gotta write a story where there's somebody who resisted that wiring his whole life, you know?
That story is every story, every novella in Spin a Black Yarn is incredibly powerful in their own way. That made me feel so claustrophobic, more so than Doug and Judy.
More than actual claustrophobia.
Well, because honestly, like, and this is not trying to be too TMI, my father was an amazing person, but I've sat in a room with somebody who was dying. And there's a certain claustrophobia there that you understand. And the horror of that story was like, what if this person who I knew my entire life started saying things that made them a stranger to me? How trapped would I be in my own memories? How trapped would I always be in that room? And again, I was just like, so that was, you know, it's the second work in Spin a Black Yarn. And I thought, oh no, Argyle's my favorite. It's not Half the House is Haunted. It's Argyle. And then I know I messaged Josh, I messaged Allison. I was just like, nope, it's Doug and Judy. Doug and Judy's my favorite. And then I'm like, actually, it's the Jupiter story. And it just like went on. Like, I was
it's interesting because you ask yourself, why don't they leave the room? Like, why don't they just, the guy isn't going to get up. Why don't they walk away? And it is interesting because you mentioned having been in a room with someone dying and how different they are. And I was with my mom while she was dying over several weeks. And she was very different. Mm-hmm. She was nonsensical at times, but she was never somebody that I didn't know. It was still like a nonsense version of my mom. Like, she was talking about whistling a lot. And my mom loved to whistle, but she wouldn't just talk about it. It was like there was some misfire going on, probably because of all the drugs they gave her to help her.
Yeah, the morphine definitely does a number. I remember my dad was talking about like fire boots and boots for like a really long time. And I'm like, I've never heard you talk about shoes once in your entire life.
You're like, Dad, no, not this isn't processing. But it was still very much my mother in that. And so that's what makes Argyle so terrifying, because even if
it's a stranger,
this person is who that person is. They did not change and just start saying this stuff, as much as other people in that room might want to think that.
So an idea that's like similar to this. And so I wrote a novel called Marbles. It's one of my favorite that, and it just hasn't come out yet for whatever reason, but Marbles is the family name.
Stupid industry.
Don't jinx us. We want the book to come out.
Marbles is family name, and it opens with four siblings are in like this walk-in pantry, and they're trying to make heads of their mother's super bizarre last wishes, right? And so there's like a debate, like, do we carry these out or not? And two of them are for it, and two of them are not. Two of them, mom was of sound mind to the end, but there's no fucking way we're doing what she's asking, no fucking way. The other two are like, no matter what someone's last wishes are, you have to carry them out. No matter what they are, because I mean, unless you're hurting someone, right?
Right. It's not like we're gonna go club some seals.
Yeah. If mom said to me and my brother's like, I want to be put in a casket and pushed out in the ocean, I might try to figure out how to do that.
Like, what? Where's the closest ocean? Did she?
Yeah. Like, I might be like, water. It's gonna push mom in a box out in the middle. Okay. You know, whatever. So that's similar to this, right? Because. This is because someone's last wishes, if they really, you know, put in the thought and time to it, could really indicate a side of them or what mattered to them, or just like even it can almost be impressionistic.
Yeah.
What life meant to them and where, you know, blah, blah, blah. Same thing here with Sean and the bed, is that I would feel 100% rooted to the chair that whole conversation, not because it's riveting what he's saying, but also possibly that, but also because these are his final words.
Man. These are his final words. And there's a reason. There's a reason why he's saying them.
Right.
And maybe for whatever reason, this is what he needs to do. Mm-hmm. And there is, right. I mean, and there's this whole, this, you know, there's a community like death doulas and people who are specifically, let's really listen to the person who's dying.
Yeah. We read the book with the death doula. Yeah. We're like, didn't know that was a thing.
I know a bunch of them. But
you're like,
I'm like, I know that seems weird, but
like ballroom dance and death
ballroom dance and death doulas and grief writing and horror. But respecting somebody's wishes in their last moments is so important. You don't know if that person's actually like, I've always wanted to be a serial killer.
Uh-huh.
There are some people that it would surprise us more than others. I'm just saying.
No doubt. And I also wonder if, like, I can't remember his son's name, right? Andrew? His name Andrew? His son? I think it is.
Oh my God. Josh, you should know.
Well, oh my God. Believe me.
Sometimes, I know. You're like, it's been years.
Yeah. No, sometimes, you know.
Judy's in the title. But otherwise, I remember Robin because I thought Robin was a girl.
I think his son's name's Andrew. Anyway. I wonder about Andrew. I wonder, or Margaret, either one of them, like, you're in that, have a little of this in them?
You know,
Dad's
like, I weirdly was like, I cannot wait for like the sequel to Argyle, like Argyle 2, Electric Boogaloo, and like a future Sam Hatton collection where like it was like in my brain, it was Margaret going, just making a really terrible choice and enjoying it. And I was like,
Dad,
and then I'm like, don't write fan fiction. Like really disgusting fan fiction.
Well, and that's okay, because as soon as you started talking about marbles and who would the cast with the kids, I'm already picturing the cast of This Is Where I Leave You just reprising their roles as siblings in a different family. And that's only because I think Adam Driver should be in every movie. So that
he is the hottest person alive.
It works.
So Josh, do you agree that Adam Driver is the hottest person alive? Because Allison and I share him as a movie boyfriend. Do you want to share him as a movie boyfriend with us?
You can. It's up
to
you.
Here.
You can.
Okay, I would love to share. I don't have a movie boyfriend right now.
Well, now you do. Well, it's fine.
Although he's pretty damn close, man.
I know. I don't want to take you away from
perfection too. He could be like your TV boyfriend because they're different. Yeah.
Every time he came on screen, I'm like, oh, he's back.
Like, oh. It's like, did they use the soft filter on him the way they used to do with the Vaseline?
Why did he look so dreamy every time?
Clearly do not use.
I watched a bunch of interviews with him and he seemed like just as erudite, just as intelligent, just as like optimistic. I was like,
are you even acting?
That's amazing.
Yeah. I know. He could have been in the FBI. They probably would have just let him in.
They're like, sure.
He wouldn't have had to do the running thing or anything. They would have just been like, you can solve all the crimes.
That's why I can't do the FBI. They would expect me to be in physical shape and know what to do with a gun. Can't. Either.
When I was little, I really wanted to be a detective. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize until my parents let me go to the library and research it that I would have to become a police officer. And that I would have to go through the police academy. And I was like, I'd have to run a mile.
Great. I'm going to do that in gym class.
I can't do that. I have a note because of my asthma.
I have a note to get out of the FBI.
I know. I don't have to do the actual FBI test. My pediatrician said my lungs are too weak.
Pediatrician.
Pediatrician is more pathetic and is exactly the note I had.
And exactly. Okay. And okay. I want to get back to Jupiter Drop only because I want to know if there's a drink called the Jupiter Drop, or do I just think there should be? Because doesn't it sound delicious?
Yeah.
That does sound delicious.
And then it swirls to
look. Yeah. It's got to be purple, oranges, like swirling.
It does have to somehow end in absinthe so you go crazy.
Okay. This is great. Yeah.
It's just like an actual orange down at the bottom.
literally at the bottom is just pure like. Are you putting on different outfit?
Now this is a costume wardrobe change.
I'm just taking mine off because otherwise I might pass out from heat. Because I'm wearing a shirt that doesn't.
You know what? Give me 1 second. I may have to do. Hold on.
Do that. I'm this shirt doesn't breathe, and this is made of I don't know what kind of synthetic. Like, but it's a million degrees, and I'm.
It is a million degrees.
My eye, and that's fine. But
you can't see it, but I definitely have not attractive sweat marks in my waitress outfit.
Jennifer, we're still live.
You're like, you can't see it. Ta-da! I'm wearing a poster.
I feel like a different human being. Like, I honestly feel like 5 pounds lighter right now.
I think you were with all the accessories.
Okay. So as somebody who did a lot of theater and a lot of burlesque and stuff in her life, wearing wigs is such a huge part of who I am. It is wigs and stage lights. You're just like, I'm going to pass.
I'm dead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you were a trooper. I'm like, when you showed up in the wig, I'm like, he's going to make it 5 minutes.
Yeah. How long did I make? Wow.
50 minutes.
50.
Well, and because we hop on before we go live and I'm controlling the studio here. So as soon as Josh popped up in the screen, I just started laughing. Jennifer did not know why I was laughing. And then I put him on and she's just like, what the?
I know. I was just like, Laura, you're here. Like I saw a ghost. Like I saw a dead triplet.
A dead triplet.
Thank you for writing a rush. Like, so I have to ask you a little bit about Little Russia in Manhattan and the idea that this novella was like translated from, and it had such a really incredible writing style that was both Edgar Allan Poe, poetry, and Dickens weird. Even.
Did you feel
very
Dickens?
I felt Dickens, Edgar Allan Poe, poetry, but then the dialogue I thought was just so perfect because it was like, you could tell it was just like a little off.
Yep. Yeah. No, that was the whole point. Well, I love the idea itself of the triplets exacting revenge, all that. But the Little Russia like setting and all that, I had read. What did I have? I read a number of them, but I can't remember exactly what I had read right before. But I love that almost clunky. Somewhat off scenes that don't really have to be there, but are there.
But they still work.
Sudden flights of philosophical fancy for 5-6 pages out of nowhere.
Oh, I love monologues where I'm like, yes. Oh, there's not even a paragraph break here. Yeah, I definitely want to read, and I did. I'm like,
yeah, where like Misha's talking about like the ninth wave and how gorgeous death
is. Oh my ninth wave. Okay, Misha's my favorite character, and I was no way, Jennifer, I was not picturing Misha Collins, so just stop thinking that right now. But just the fact that you have this character who's like, bring on death. You clearly am the murderer, and they're like, but you're not. But clear, didn't you see? And we've met some crazy characters. You've written some crazy characters, but it's like, am I supposed to be cheering for him? Because I am.
Oh, I was too. I cheered for him. They found him like sniffing the death scene.
Yeah, like sniffing the death scene, like scooping things into like a little jar, and he's like, I just collect it. I'm like, yes.
And his birth scene, like.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was just ridiculously amazing. And I'm like, no way any of this happens. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Does he think it happens? It doesn't matter.
So I will say, you captured something so perfect about like the Russian community. So my husband is Russian. His family is Russian. When I go visit them, they speak in Russian. Long, huge monologues about me. I hear my name. And then I'm like, what did they say? And my husband will translate it into like one line. Oh, they said blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, but you talked for 10 minutes. And even when he translates, I'm like, that doesn't sound like a real sentence. He's probably like, wasn't. They said, they are happy for your health and well-being. Also, tomorrows are always important. And I'm like, what? That's not what people say, is it? But I think they do.
I think it's like a Roman's grasp of the English language, if that's how he translates. Like, do you understand either of these?
I feel like a lot of it's probably like, oh, yeah, Jennifer's still a demon witch whore. And he just like doesn't want to tell me that part. And
yeah,
he's like,
so he's
saying they're really happy.
Yeah, he's improvising what he can get away with. He's like, think fast. And a sentence comes out and it's not really.
He's like, right. He's like, tomorrows are very important. no, it is what? Like, I'm so sincerely mean this. Like, I don't expect that story to be everyone's favorite, right? There's going to be like a reader who's like, oh my God, this is sludgy. And why is this guy talking about this painting for 5 pages and that? But I didn't mind. And I don't care at all. I'm like thrilled about it. When I went back to start rewriting it, because the first four, and actually including Daphne, the first 5 stories were whatever the standard regular rewrite I go through. Mm-hmm. With that one, I'm like, oh, you don't need this scene. And I'm like, oh, no. Don't get rid of it.
Keep it in and add like a sonnet of off rhymes.
Yes, exactly. Right. And then like there were even moments where the dialogue felt too smooth to me. But I was like, no, make this clunkier.
Fix that.
And it was like intentionally.
It terrible for everyone.
Yeah.
So bad that they love it.
It was so liberating to, you guys should try it. Like something like that.
Oh, I mean.
It was so liberating to go in there and like.
Let's
like,
make it terrible for people.
Yeah. Make it awkward. Make it like.
I'm not even doing that on purpose.
I know. I'm like, that's my writing style.
Yeah.
Like, I want it to be terrible for people.
So I had to tell Trisha like all of this, you know? Mm-hmm. And then she was like, man, like how do we let people know that this is just in interviews or whatever? But the writer Ross Jeffrey read it mm-hmm. and he goes, dude, just open the story with translated from Russian. And I was like,
yeah.
Oh, right.
And then this one is
that was Ross's idea. Ross Jeffrey was like, just give us a little like line there. And I'm like, oh my God. Thank you. Yes, you're right.
And listening to it, it works so perfectly because you can feel like it's these people who are talking and you're getting it down not quite perfectly. But those scenes, it's like, where are these scenes? And you're still picturing these scenes, even if you're like, well, where does this one ultimately matter? And it only matters in terms of the larger whole, not because there's going to be like a plot point in there.
Right.
And I love the freedom to do that, especially... you and me. But the whole freedom to do that, especially it's been that it's not a really long work. So it's like, well, you're not doing it to make it super long because it's not supposed to be super long, but it fills out this picture of Little Russia in a way that you just don't get if you only focus on what's happening.
Totally. That's to me, that's the dream scenario. And Jennifer, you brought it up earlier, the vibe over the plot. Mm-hmm. And I think you both brought it up. And
that's all right.
Oh yeah. That's all right. Like,
I'd rather feel that, mm-hmm. and I'd rather feel the David Lynch movie rather than have to know everything, every sense, or make every sense of it. I would rather walk away just with the feeling, and bizarrely with him, I would walk away, even if it was super, maybe with the exception of Mulholland Drive, I would walk away feeling like almost strangely like upbeat or optimistic.
Did you not like Mulholland Drive?
Man, you know what? It was just a little brutal for me what happened with her. It was just
it's not.
That's what I haven't seen. La la la.
Okay, then we won't really talk.
No, go
about
ahead.
It.
Go ahead.
If
it's brutal, I probably should skip it anyway.
Well, no.
It's emotionally brutal.
Right, emotionally brutal. Yeah, it was. Yeah. I kind of walked away like, oh no, you know?
That one is you're like, okay.
But that's,
like,
you know,
even in Twin Peaks, you're always left with like a little bit of optimism.
Yeah, absolutely. I would even argue like
Blue Velvet even.
Oh yeah. Like all of them, because there's like the spirit behind it too, like the filmmaking spirit behind it and all that, right?
Yeah.
There was something about Mulholland Drive where I was just like, ooh boy, I felt cold at the end of that. But obviously it's brilliant. Allison told me that or she considers the song in that one that woman sings. Allison's like, that's the greatest cinematic moment I've ever seen. Like, she fucking loves it. So she saw the movie before I did, and she was like, there's a scene that I cried in. Let's see if you cry also. And
I'm like, oh, wow. What a relationship test.
Yeah.
Did she just stare at you the whole time? Like, I'll figure out if you're actually my soulmate.
And I, that's a great, that, I see, that's a good story idea. That's amazing.
I know, right there. And you don't cry at the moment that you're supposed to. And then the male, it's you, but I'm like, now it's a fictional male killer.
Oh, imagine like you die.
And he fake cries at the wrong time because he's like, oh, she's going to be mad. It's got to be this moment. And he fake cries. And then she just plots his death for the rest of the book.
In Dreams. Right. In Dreams by Roy Orbison. Right.
Yeah. Regina's helping out here.
Yeah. But so now, no, that's a great story idea. Imagine like you're sitting down to watch a movie and then like, you can see her kind of looking through the window at you to see when you cry. Anyway, I cry.
We've all been there where we're like, yeah. Hi, watch or read my favorite thing. And I just like, I do it to my husband. I'm like, read my favorite book. And every 2 seconds, I'm like, what part are you at? What are you feeling right now? And he's just like, oh my gosh.
That the relationship test was, I've heard of both pickles and olives, where one person in the relationship has to like them and the other one has to hate them. So one gives theirs to the other. And then you find out mutually
hating the same thing is almost more important.
It helps someone who has to feed five people. And if you did the Venn diagram of what people in my family will eat, and there is no overlap other than I am a goat. And will eat basically anything except for, thanks to Pearl, I no longer eat pork. Other than that, yeah. So I think you're correct. It is easier if you can have those just be synced up rather than in my family where everyone's like, hey, what's that? Like, children, they're fun.
That's why you just have dogs.
They don't eat what you ate, I hope, right? Like, they're not eating pie?
Mm-mm.
Neither are you.
No, because I'm a vegetarian and my dog eats venison.
He eats venison? You feed your dog Bam.
Don't say it like that.
So Vala, I'm a vegetarian as well. You know, we both are. And Vala got sick recently. And so we've had to give her the bland food diet, which means that we're like boiling chicken.
Yes.
And we've never cooked meat in here before.
And you're like, right.
It's weird, man.
It's so weird.
And on like the stove and stuff.
When we first moved into our haunted house, our dog immediately ate a mushroom outside and got really sick. So he had to be on like, boiled chicken and or boiled hamburg, which I didn't even know you could do. Don't know how to cook it. My husband and I are both vegetarians. And we were just like, how to boil how do you know it's done? Yeah. Is this cooked?
And the way that you knew it was done is that it just kind of looked gray.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, is it done? Like, I don't want to make the dog sicker by giving it like, here's some raw chicken.
Your dog just did shrooms. I'm sure he's
my dog did shrooms.
Your dog's just like woo.
But it's really like, as a vegetarian, you forget that you don't know a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I had no idea. I'm like, do I cook it in a pot or a fry? Like, I didn't know.
Well, and I was a vegetarian for years, and it was kind of those formative years where I probably should have been paying more attention to the cooking part. And then when I went back to incorporating, I didn't know what I was doing. And the first thing I do remember learning from my science teacher is, if you don't eat meat, you don't make the enzyme that breaks it down. So if anybody
When the second you said enzyme, my artist brain was like, I don't know what any of that means.
No, but it's just one of those things where if someone were not to eat meat, like if either of you were to suddenly be offered a hamburger, your body couldn't process it because you can't
right. I know, because it's been like 25 years.
Wow. For me it's been 8.
Oh yeah, so I'm it's 24 for me, and for my husband it's I think he's like 8 or 9.
As you say, it's his entire life because he's only that old.
He is much younger than me, but no, he was still a meat eater when we were courting. And I think it became, once he realized I was the primary chef, he's like, I guess I'm not eating meat anymore. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I don't know how to cook it.
Mm-hmm. You got to know how to do that.
Oh, speaking of that, there's a meal of rat in Igorov.
Yes.
That was unpleasant. That's what I was saying earlier. There's some more unpleasant things in that than in Argyle, but they aren't as disturbing as what happens in Argyle, because squeamish kind of thing. That's a different kind of disturbing.
It's a different kind of squeamish. The thing about the, like, just the slurping of the tail.
Oh, man, yeah.
Why did you write that? I felt very sad.
Why did you make us read that, Josh? I almost stopped reading.
We should have stopped at Jupiter Drop.
Just to mean message you, like, you're a vegetarian.
Yeah.
At least he felt sick afterwards.
He does this to us either, because I think we found out, I think I found out that you were a vegetarian after the story in Goblin.
With, oh, like, God.
The meat cake and the fat frosting. And you were just like, and I'm a vegetarian. I'm like, dude, that's sick.
That's like as meaty as it gets, man, that birthday party. Yeah.
Oh, God.
I mean, that one's still the one that I describe as oh, the gift of the Magi, but done completely wrong, because that's totally what that story is.
Yeah. But it is. Yeah.
I remember Allison read it first and she's like, you're not going to enjoy the meat cake. And I was like, and I didn't even understand what was going to happen. She just said, you're not going to enjoy the meat cake. And I'm like, well, why would I enjoy something Allison. Like a meat cake? So and then I was reading it and I'm like, oh God, mm-hmm. No, I'm not enjoying this.
For the theatrical reading, our friend Cindy, who's in our like troupe, made the meat cake out of like, I don't know what she made it out of, but it's in our garage right now, and it's like, big, and it's like, it's gross. It's gross.
Okay, but it's not really made of food products, is
no,
it?
No.
Because it's still in your garage. It has to be non-parent.
It's like right in view when I go in the garage.
Oh, I'll take a picture
for you guys and send it to you after.
Please.
Yeah.
Please, because I want to post it next to like me serving up food at the Double R. Like, look, I don't have pie, but I do have this meat cake. God, I want to throw up.
Jennifer, next time we have like we want to do a non-guest episode, we should just go through the like list of most disturbing moments we've read from any of our guests. And like most of them are going to be from Josh. Like honestly, and it's not like he's the only horror, but like as far as full-on disturbing, the most disturbing for me is still, it's another story in Goblin. I'm blanking on the name, but it involves the zoo. And with that one, I'm like,
brutal.
Now when I felt wrong about, like,
you should.
You should, Josh.
I remember I was in a coffee shop working on that one, and I was like, oh no, this is wrong, man. Look at that. That is okay. That's right. Let them eat cake. Come on. What is going on? That's great.
I want that on a shirt, but I found it.
That is too good.
I was thinking that's a great band name. Let them eat cake.
Or the album. Let them eat cake.
Let them eat cake.
Next time the high strung like, the new album title. There's your short list of suggestions.
Yeah. You definitely, I would just write like a ballad that's titled that and it has nothing to do with anything. Just like, just pitch that to your band. Be like,
when I look into your eyes,
oh no, he's doing
eyes.
It.
Oh, your skin soft as skin.
Let the meat cake. Let the meat cake.
Like the lard frosting. I mean, that's what.
Oh my God. Like, this has gone off the rails.
It didn't start on the rails. There were no rails.
I know. There were no rails. When Josh Malerman shows up dressed like a homecoming queen, Laura Palmer.
Honestly, the wig also could have doubled if you're ever in like a Muppet tribute band and you need to
be Miss Piggy.
Or Miss Poogie.
Yeah.
Because, you know, either way. The
Egyptian
blonde
mummy, Miss Piggy.
I just remembered Miss Poo the mummy.
Poogie.
Was it Pooh the mummy? P-U the mummy?
I know. I'm like, so Miss Piggy
did not have blonde
curls. Pooh the mummy in the Muppet version of the Pooh the mummy story about you and your sister.
Look, there's a lot of
she's Miss Poogie.
That Jim Henson Studios is not responding to my requests of things. Like everyone has asked.
We're coming up with great ideas this episode, everyone.
I agree.
Adam Driver playing it straight. They haven't done it yet. It's just asking for it. It hasn't happened.
Who the mummy though, man? That's like there's a real something the there, man.
He stopped listening to us 20
just dedicate it to my sister.
And then
you can
also,
finally dedicate it to Allison.
No,
and you
just
can
to
just
my
tell
sister.
Your fiance that it's still her. But it's
Jennifer,
for your stand-up, you know what would be a really good...
Oh, shut up, my stand-up.
You know what would be a really good bit would be the you wanting to be a detective, but then discovering all the work that goes into...
Oh,
your-
so...
To climb this?
I think I told you that I have this really sad notebook that I call my comedy notebook that I always write down ideas for my tight 10. And that is in there.
It is.
Most of it is about pets and like horny cockatiels. And then there's also like a tight 10 about like what I would do for health insurance. And it's real. That one's really disgusting. And I tried to like try it out with my husband and he was like, this is just sad. It's so awful.
There's such a fine line though between funny and sad.
That I'm like, but isn't it funny? And he's like, No. It's gross.
Whole laugh or cry and you fall on the wrong side of that line every single time. Like, no. The audience is just like, can I spent- take you home and adopt you?
So, Allison, did I tell you that once I had a dream that Josh Malerman and I were doing stand-up comedy someplace, and he was like running around because he wanted to wear a pink shirt. He couldn't find it.
No, but that seems on brand.
It was on brand, I think. Because yeah. I like messaged to him and he's like, I do have a pink shirt, but I know where it is.
Yeah, it's actually right behind this computer right now. Right.
Are you sure this isn't just something you forgot to tell me did happen and wasn't a dream? Because I mean,
I will say, like, honestly, every couple of weeks, my husband looks at me and he goes, when are you and Josh Malerman going on a comedy tour? And I'm like, who's going to book that? I mean, yeah, we're not comedians, but we would definitely do that.
It's fine.
I think no matter how much we've talked about this before, no matter how much time allotted, I think mine would be just one story.
And I also think mine would be complete improv. I would like marvelous. Right.
I can see you literally improvising the whole thing.
Shut the fuck up. Oops, sorry. Don't swear at the guest, Jennifer.
You just dropped an F-bomb several times.
I know, but like not at me when I'm like, shut the fuck up, Josh. I feel like at one point we're all going to be like at some sort of weird fucking convention together. And there will be alcohol and like,
we're going to do it.
And then like something's going to happen and I'm going to force Josh to do a stand-up comedy routine.
So the closest.
And then I leave. And I'm going to like talk to your Ryan and be like, I'm his manager now. Like, look at me, kid. I'm going to take him far. He's going to go well.
I like how
Hollywood.
You're secretly smoking through this too. Because all of a sudden your voice got like really low and you're like, hey, kid. Well, I'm like, what's that?
He can go far in the comedy scene.
No, all I gotta do is I go to a place, they're doing karaoke, I sign you guys up, and then I just hit the machine off and just hand you the mic, drop it.
And then we accidentally sing all the songs from Grease.
That's fine.
Oh, yeah.
Which is also comedy because...
As long as you just make sure you hand jive.
That's good.
It starts with that and then ends with like pure like panic, anxiety, death comedy.
Yeah. I wonder if anyone's ever just freaked out on stage, just melted, and that was their whole act.
I feel like Andy Kaufman, that was like his life.
called it that, but I'm not sure that's
I would also call it mental illness, but
I just like threw the wig and jacket, and I just want you guys to kind of see like how bizarrely
that it looks.
Oh my god, it's a dead body.
Throw some plastic on that, and then you've got yourself a Twin Peaks crime scene.
That is crazy. I just looked to the left.
Love that.
Like, that looks like it's going to stand up any second.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it definitely will. That's the anxiety in me. I'm like, that's going to stand up, Josh.
Someone took, like, the water and melted the Wicked Witch because it's just like, I'm melting because the body's gone, but the hair is still there. I'm scared.
Friendos, I feel like I should probably cut this.
Over an hour. School. I probably should go.
I'm like, I think your kids need to be picked up at some point.
Eventually, it is minimum day, but it's not this minute. I'm not late. Okay.
I know, I would just keep. So, Josh, you do hold our record for the longest shows ever.
Good. What is the longest one ever? Are we nearing it?
No, because there was a time when we were like close to 2 hours.
Right.
Because the last time,
breaks, you had a lot of alcohol first.
Yeah, that's the episode. There was an episode where we all had a bottle of bourbon. It was Josh, you took like 2 bathroom breaks. And
it was just
we weren't quite ready, and then our producer, who I will not name names because it wasn't me, started, and you're like, hold on, and you ran off.
Was the episode where I really lowballed it. Like, I just showed up with, like, one cocktail, and then, like, Josh and Allison both had, like, a bottle of bourbon, and
rookie
I was like,
moves,
oh, I don't have, oops, sorry, my, literally my phone is like, we're gonna shut down soon. And I was like, oh, I only have one cocktail. And then, like, off camera, my husband, like, handed me a bottle of bourbon.
Yes.
And I was like, we're on. And that was a close to a 2-hour episode. I mean, so professional.
Hold on, Paolo.
No. Is the dog coming in the room?
I know, it's doggy. Hi, doggy.
Yeah, like, it doesn't matter. It's all right. She does that, you know.
No, I get it. My dog Lord Tubby is currently right outside this room, and every once in a while, I just like hear the little claws, like, hello.
Mommy.
Like,
there's still this relationship happening, right? Where you like help me, Dad.
Yeah, like you do have to feed me. And love me and just have like continuous eye contact always.
That's my 7-year-old.
I will say, so after like, it seems like a collection of novellas is something that like would happen sort of intermittently or something between like a bunch of novels or something. You'd be like, I'm going to do that again. You know, that kind of thing. Like Goblin happened. And then there was sort of a collection of novellas. I'm going to just do the math real fast. Like 6 years after that. And then this was like 10 years since then or something. But something about this one, like I want to get right back to this again. I don't know what it is. It's like as a writer that has many ideas, and most of us do, right? To be able to get like
sometimes good ideas or just ideas.
Yeah, we were all seeing the good ideas. Lots of ideas and then putting them down on paper and I go, what the?
But yeah, okay. But then
Word document that's like, these are my ideas, and sometimes I just read them out loud to myself alone in a room, and I'm like, I should be in a hospital.
But that's also, Jennifer, why you end up writing books based on jokes that you make, because they all kind of in your head you can't sort what's good and what's not, and then I have to go, no, hold on to that. Now there's a novel.
I know, where I'm like, oh my god, it's ballroom dancing, except like everybody dies.
Yeah.
And Allison's like, go with it. And I'm like,
ballroom blitz and go.
I will. And then I'm like, what the fuck?
But I mean, it's like five ideas just came out like at once. You know how good that feels? Yeah. Like, I feel like so good about that. I'm like, you know, like Igorov and Doug and Judy and Argyle, like all those ideas that have been, I don't want to say like on the list forever. That's not true. But like, you know,
they're sitting on the bench, but they're still good players.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, wow, all five of you just at once. And it's so. It's like tempting to do something like that again because there's just so many ideas.
Oh yeah. God. I love it so much.
Also, I'm a huge fan, just in a general sense, of like the horror anthology movie and that sort of thing. Twilight Zone, the movie, Creepshow,
yes.
Trick or Treat, like all those things. And one of the reasons why is like, if you think about like those movies, there's always like the one segment that's maybe like the weak link or something. Mm-hmm. But then like over time, it almost becomes like the special one to us because it's like, oh, that weird one with the...
No, exactly. The one that like, as a kid, we were like, oh, like nothing happened. It was just like kids like sitting in their grandparents' house and there was like a puppet in the corner that like looked weird.
Or like
and this, now
like,
you're like...
cat growling in the house all in front of
there's like a cat growling.
And then...
And now like as an adult, this is where our nightmares are.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And there's something about that they almost like... The centerpiece stories lifted up the weak one when we were younger, and by association, they're all special to each other now because they're all part of the same team of this movie that we love. So there's something there too. It's not just getting more ideas out there. It's that there's a situation where your ideas can help each other out. Like Doug and Judy, I think probably help Half the House is Haunted, but that doesn't mean that it's better or something. It's hard for me to explain what I mean by that.
No, I know. I get it. Because you're speaking in vibes right now.
Right. I am definitely speaking in
vibes. You're speaking in vibes. And before we end, I'm just going to say, and I think I've said it before, I'll say it again. Josh, I would like you to write the creepiest children's book in the world, but under the name Josh Meowlerman. And please have it be about weird cats. So I'm just putting that out there into the universe.
All right, I'm
on it. My husband literally calls you Meowlerman every time. I'm just like, oh, we have Meowlerman on the show. He's like, you mean Meowlerman?
Okay, I was like, still thinks that your name should have Mallard actually in it because the duck singer.
Oh, a duck thing would also be good. Yeah.
So, I mean, you have the whole children's animal vibe. To your old Musicians of Bremen right there.
Jeez. All right, kiddos. We're going to officially cut it short. Short, okay. Like over an hour. We're just ending ish now. Thank you, everybody who's watching live. Elisa, I can't see.
Thanks for that. I love reading this at the very end. This is amazing.
She loves you.
She loves you.
Pure joy and craziness, and she wants the ducks. Pure joy and craziness.
Ducks and cats. Josh Mallerman and Josh Mallardman writing. Oh my God! Like a Stephen King, Richard Bach, like two fake people. No, I love it. Okay.
Bachman books for
everyone. Tune in next week. We have May Cobb on the show. Last time she got hot sauce in her eye.
No more hot sauce, May. No more hot sauce.
Next week, maybe I'll be in a bikini top. I have something that looks just like the cover of her book, but I told her, I'm like, I would also be like completely in a cover up. But I mean, here's the thing. Right now, I'm really sweaty, dressed you like got a the waitress. I got the boobs.
I will leave the bikini boob job for you.
Oh, it's not a boob job. Not a boob job.
Boob job to fill out the bikini. So I will leave all the boob job to you.
Thank you for using a comma or an ellipses there. Everybody, bye. Spin a Black Yarn by Josh Mallerman. I loved every single part of this book. Mm-hmm. But weirdly, my favorite part was your afterwards when you talked about what the title Spin a Black Yarn meant to you. So
sweet.
Everybody, please read it. Read that especially. And we will see you all next week. Oh, fine cup of coffee. And thank you for coming to Twin Peaks with us. Bye.
Bye, everybody.